any of these things cross your mind? These passive words like, I hope it works out, it should be okay,
yeah.
I think, you know, fate, hope, any of those things? I said, that's a crutch. If you have to use any of those, you need to go back and you need to plan better. You know, and the same thing goes if you're applying for a program or trying to reach a goal or mm-hmm. something like that. Yes, you're right. You are going to fail. But if it's going to be a failure, you want that failure to be because of something you had no influence over. Sometimes the cards are just not in your favor.
You're listening to the Christoph Lewis Podcast, a podcast where I have conversations with inspirational people. My name is Chris, but my family calls me Christoph. My goal is to have as many conversations as possible with people who have forged their own path by pursuing their dreams, making them a reality, all the while emitting positivity and sharing this knowledge with others. I seek these people out and share this information with you, proving to the world that you can do what makes you happy and do what you want for a living while being a good human being. We'll talk about careers, but we'll also cover any story that inspires. Let's do this while helping each other. Thanks for listening. I'm happy you're here. What's up, my friends? Welcome to the Christoph Lewis Podcast. This is conversation number 90, and I'm absolutely excited that you're here with me today. My guest today has had an incredible career and multiple career transitions, and I was very humbled to have him here. He's none other than Mike Rutledge, and he was both a Navy SEAL and an Army helicopter pilot, which absolutely blows me away. He just retired after 30 years in the service, and I loved hearing about his transition and everything that came with that. He had some great pieces of advice, and I'm very excited to share this episode with you. Know that you can find this episode and all the other contemplations, conversations on christophlewis.com/podcast, and you can find me on Instagram at Christoph Lewis. So without further ado, welcome to the Christoph Lewis Podcast.
Thanks, Chris. I'm glad to be here. Thanks for making time for me.
God, I could say the same. It's very much likewise. It's pretty impressive, your career. Everything that I know about you is just super humbling to have you on here and be able to talk to you. So I do really appreciate your time. And you obviously recently retired. So for what it's worth from me, congratulations on that after 30 years is nothing short of impressive.
Thanks. I'm glad. I'm glad to be retired.
How do you,
I was a little anxious at the beginning, but now I'm...
Yeah, how do you feel now? I mean, how does one feel after, like, I talked to a lot of people that have, like, I did 9 years, I got out last August, and I talked to a lot of people, like, 10 years and below, but after 30 years, I'm like, how does somebody who did, like, 30 years and everything that we're probably going to get into keep yourself busy? Like, what's the mindset after that?
Well, actually, to figure out the mindset, you got to hear like the last few months before. And so I spent the last 10 to that 30 years telling myself I wasn't going to be that guy who's going to be so institutionalized and so robotic that he couldn't live without the military.
Yeah.
And then about, after I made a decision to retire, then about 6 months out, I'm like, holy cow, I am that guy. Like, I can't survive off the system, you know? Like, it's like getting out of prison. They don't know how to act, so they want to go back in. And so there was a lot of anxiety, like a ton of anxiety, even though I had, you know, a lot of skill sets.
Sure.
Lots of jobs lined up and other post-military careers. But holy cow, was I anxious. And I don't know what it was, but no kidding, about a day after I retired and all the emotions and sadness and regret and all that kind of stuff, what have I done? And the day after, it was like just a sheet of relief. Like, I just got a 100-pound rucksack yanked off my back.
That's a good feeling.
Yeah. And so I haven't regretted it yet. I mean, I'm sure I will, you know, get a little space behind me and start missing the lifestyle and the people and stuff like that. But right now, no regrets.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's pretty incredible to ask that, because obviously I was just saying I did less than 1/3 of your time. And I just, what's today, the 20th? We're recording this on the 20th of August. So yesterday was 1 year since I got out. I got out on the 19th of August of last year. And so after 1 year, I have my own reflection. You had one day, I had 1 year, and there was, obviously there's going to be a lot of things we're going to miss, and there's no way around that. So what I've like tried to deal with is like, one thing is like this podcast, like how do I help keep up the tempo in my life? Cause I still work a day job, then I come home and do this. And like, I'm just used to being that busy and used to like being able to do things that scare me. And now it's just podcasts. Like sometimes I'm super intimidated by the people I talk to. Like it's crazy to even be talking to you. Right. And so I've just kind of found different ways to kind of flex into different things that challenge me continuously, because I saw a post a little while back that you said, and you're like talking about leadership with type A mentalities and the pros and cons and stuff on that. You talked a little bit about that. And I know for me, like, I was constantly going. So I had to figure out, how am I going to fill this significant gap in my life with something else? And that's one thing that I'm still struggling with. So it's interesting to hear after 30 years how that goes. And you said you had a little bit of regrets, but I mean, like, what are the good things that you like? How, what are the good feelings and emotions of moving forward from that?
Well, believe it or not, the biggest trauma in my whole life, and don't laugh, it's what am I going to wear every day? Because I didn't go on to like a contracting job or something, you know, paramilitary or anything associated. You know, I bought my own business in Indiana. So I worked for myself. I got, you know, several guys working with me and for me. And so, like, no kidding, my first couple of weeks, I was really struggling. I'm like, I don't know, do I wear shorts? Like, I don't even have that many civilian clothes. I don't even know what to wear.
Right.
So after 30 years, so I finally had to go out and buy, you know, 10 pairs of the same pants and 10 of the same shirts and make myself sort of a uniform so
right.
I could figure out what to wear every day. So that was kind of an odd transition. but it does, you know, after always being regimented and, you know, even when you're not deploying, you've got times you do things and places you go. And
sure.
And so to not have that structure, I mean, I maintained a little bit of it, but to not have that structure, you kind of feel lost in space just a little bit. So I don't know, I'm only 2 months into it.
We'll have
this conversation a year from now and I may have it figured out, but so far I don't.
Yeah. And it's just like, you continue to figure it out. And that structure, I was talking to somebody else on the podcast and he was a military guy that was in for, I think, 14 years. So still, you know, a good chunk of time. And that's funny hearing like him bring that up as well. Cause I know I perform really well when I have that structure and I know exactly what my schedule is and I know what everything is going on in my life. But then like now I'm in charge of it. Nobody's going to hold me to go to work. Like nobody's going to throw me in jail if I don't show up to work. And nobody's going to hold me accountable for like my personal development at all, like whatsoever. And so I'm like, I have to figure out this new structure and this new schedule for myself to be able to continue to be productive. Cause like I'm type A productive, but you got to like slot me into the right schedule. So now I got to do both ends of it. So that's kind of been my issue and I'm still trying to figure that out.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what I didn't bring with me that surprised me is like when I retired, I retired. I don't have Navy SEAL crap on my window. I don't have like 160th sticker somewhere.
Yeah, yeah.
I keep all my paraphernalia limited to one room in the house, you know, and I don't wear camouflage backpacks or parts of my uniform or, you know, have caps with flags on it. I don't march around the grocery store. So that was easy. Like I was ready to be a civilian.
Yeah.
So I didn't have that problem at all. I grew a beard for about a week and couldn't stand it. So I just got shaggy hair. That's about the only casualty of being a civilian now.
Yeah, I went almost a year without cutting my hair. So I got a huge thing out of my face and it was absolutely way too long. But I want to go back and talk about like, obviously career, like I said, it's impossible to fit 30 years into 30 minutes. But for those that don't know you, like you obviously went in as a naval air crewman and rescue swimmer. And then you later went to BUDS and then the 160th. And that's like the micro synopsis, at least that I know of. And I just think
that's
it's
about it.
Yeah, right. You say it so nonchalantly and everything. Like, I don't know. I've worked, obviously, you know, I give you really quick background. Like, I worked a little bit with both, actually, and super impressive. But what I like to do is obviously highlight career transitions. And I think it's cool that regardless of if you're in the military or if you're a civilian, that you can transition, right? You can do something. If you don't like it, you can go do something else. And I think it's really cool to see you do that. And then go to be a SEAL, which obviously isn't easy, and do that, and then still go from that, and then go to, you know, CWO route, the Chief Warrant Officer for everyone that's civilian, and then go be a pilot as well, because it sounds like that's something you wanted to always do. And I'd love to hear in your own words, like, you know, as much as we can in this time frame of this career transition that you went in, like your mind frame about always like pursuing what you wanted in your career.
Yeah, well, believe it or not, I got my spiel down, so I can do it pretty concisely.
Nice.
Before we get into that, I will tell you, I've had several people, you know, even younger people, say, I want to do what you do. I want to be a SEAL. Then I want to be a 160th guy. Then I want to be an astronaut. And I kind of like, hey, kid, pump the brakes. Here's the deal. I'm not as flighty as it would appear. You know, you got to remember, I tell them, like, I didn't plan to do all those things. Like, I planned to go in. I wanted to be a Navy pilot. I never got to do that. So then I went to BUDS. You know, and I never planned on getting on the SEAL teams. And 9 years down the road, an opportunity showed up. And, you know, I didn't necessarily want to be a 160th pilot forever, but I did it for 15 years and so on and so on. You know, so I kind of tell them, like, none of this stuff was planned. And keep in mind, I just didn't hop from career to career. I mean, I did almost 10 years in the SEAL teams and 15 in the 160th. So it wasn't a, you know, it wasn't a haphazard, as it sounds like, just chasing, you know, golden rings back and forth. It wasn't really like that. that's kind of how it happened. I grew up in an aviation background and family. I was a fat band kid from Illinois, which isn't an exaggeration. I wasn't athletic at all until I got into high school. And I kind of had a talent for football. I was a really good football player, you know, state championship for a couple of years in a row, and got a scholarship to college, played Division I football for one season, was a horrible, horrible student that kicked me out of the semester.
That's interesting.
So I finished, pretty impressive start. So I finished my first semester at community college, and before I even finished that, I went and enlisted in the Navy. So I'm like, well, I'm going to be a Navy pilot, having no idea how dumb I was and how underqualified I was. And so, you know, not only was I not flying F-14s off a carrier, I was an air crewman, enlisted air crewman on a CH-46 helicopter delivering cheese balls and sodas back and forth to the ships in Desert Storm. So I was pretty pissed. You know, I felt like I got sold pretty bad bill of goods. But there was kind of an interesting conversation that led me to just, you know, say, screw it, I'm going to go enlist. I tried to get a Naval Academy in my senior year of high school. I talked to a Naval Academy recruiter, and I will always remember this, and I wish I could remember his name. And he was an A6 pilot. So he was like a god in my eyes. You know, he's a Naval Aviator, that's what I want to be. And he didn't even mince words. He took me in, he had the stack of papers, and he said, hey, so I looked at your SATs. He goes, they suck. He goes, you've got like a C-plus average. He goes, you're a pretty decent football player. He goes, but I'm not sure, you know, he goes, you're definitely not Naval Academy material. He goes, I'm not really sure you're even fitted for life in the military. He goes, so good luck to you.
Oh my God.
So I'm not going to say that was a catalyst, but it actually really pissed me off. So, whoever that guy is, you know, I hope you're rotting in a pile of feces somewhere, but, so everybody's got their starts like that. So I enlisted Navy. I was an air crewman for about 2.5 years. I was stationed in Guam, which is like a death knell from a farm kid from Illinois. I mean, a 30-mile island in the middle of the Pacific.
That's weird.
And one day, you know, I'm out there wrenching on a helicopter, sweating to death in this tropical island. And here comes another helicopter, lands. And these guys have no shirts on and UDT shorts and big muscles and long hair. And they just step off the river, no shirt on, walk by, you know, dripping water, carrying fins. And I just asked him, and I said, like, who the hell are those guys? And like, oh, those guys are Navy SEALs. What? I don't even know what that is. You know, like the movie came out back then, whenever it was, late 80s or something like that.
Yeah.
That's all I knew about it. So I'm like, these guys are in the Navy? So whatever they do, I want to do. So kind of not at all like it is today. You know, there was no movies. There was nothing really written about it. You know, like you kind of just signed up not knowing what you're really in for.
Yeah.
And so there was no chest beating. I didn't want to be a Navy SEAL since I was a little kid. I was really, you know, I mean, I was even like just a B-minus swimmer at the time. So I just went and told my career counselor, I'm like, hey, I want to be a Navy SEAL. And he's like, oh, here's a piece of paper. You know, it was before the days of the internet. And so I just signed this piece of paper and you know, a message came and said, go take your PT test at Naval Special Warfare Group 1 in Guam. And I did, or actually it was in the Philippines at that time. And I took my PT test and, you know, all of a sudden I get orders to Buds. And it was about that easy.
That's crazy.
You know, so they're just, you know, there wasn't the internet. There wasn't the breadth of knowledge that there is now where any kid can get on a computer. You can find out anything you want to know about Buds and getting in shape and that kind of stuff. So I thought I was in shape. And so I get to Buds and, you know, I've already got the look. I've got long, wavy blonde hair. You know, I've been lifting tons of weights, running, you know, because I already kind of think I got the team guy thing licked. And holy cow, did I get my ass handed to me. You know, damn. The first day or two was the world's harshest wake-up call. You know, obviously harsher for other ones who ring out, you know, the first couple of days. But so that's when it got real after that. So I did make it through Buds. I got rolled back once for the camera was wrong with my legs. But I made it through Hell Week, started dive phase and got rolled back for some fungus or whatever it was. Graduated in class 197 in 1994. And got assigned to SEAL Team 1 and went to SEAL Team 1 and spent almost 9 years at SEAL Team 1 with a stint as an instructor and then another stint as the training cell instructor doing air operations and combat diving. And then, you know, at this point, 9/11 hadn't happened yet. Did several deployments, did a leading petty officer and LPO deployment. And I was instructing. And so as one of the air operations guys, you know, we're always working with the 160th guys, a lot of the HCS-5, HCS-4, the helicopter squadrons in the Navy. So working with 160th guys a lot, you know, and I was actually still flying as a civilian on my off time when I wasn't deployed. I was at the airport, and I got my private and commercial license. I was towing gliders, doing kind of weird stuff. So I didn't know what I was going to do with it. anyway, so I'm hanging out with these 160th guys, and you know, one of them said, I'm like, well, I really like everything else. I'm like, well, I want your job. You know, and he was a warrant officer, a guy named Rick Starr. And he's like, well, he goes, you can have it, you know, but you got to be a warrant officer first to come to 160th. Again, not even smart enough to know what I was getting myself into. He's like, yeah, here's, you know, the internet was just in its infancy. Well, here's a website, or you can call his phone number.
Yeah.
And so I, you know, so 9/11 hit, and I was on a deployment. And so I kind of started working this application to a warrant officer flight training transfer to the Army. Now, I'd already tried to get in the Navy, and I was too old. So their cutoff was 27. So I'd already burned that bridge.
Okay.
So I'd already said goodbye to the Navy in my head. So during this first deployment after 9/11, in between stuff, amazingly, I was, you know, working on this application. And I submitted it as soon as we got back. I think it was January of 2002, January, February of 2002, and submitted it, got signed off by my CO at SEAL Team 1 and all the guys at Navy Bureau of Personnel, grudgingly. And then, you know, lo and behold, a couple months later, I get orders, hey, you've been accepted to Warrant Officer Candidate School, report July 1st of 2002. Wow. So, you know, one minute I'm at SEAL Team 1, and then the next, you know, we go down to MEPS, and now I'm in the Army, and I ship my family down to Fort Rucker, Alabama.
Wow.
So, yeah. So, complete culture shock going from living in Coronado.
I can't imagine.
To Southeast Alabama in July.
Yeah, it's a little bit different.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, the funny part is I'd always mocked the Army my entire Navy career. I mean, at this point, I had 12 and a half years.
How hilarious is that? Yeah.
So, I mean, you know, made fun of airborne school. I was the only SEAL to ever go to Pathfinder school, completely mocked that program. You know, all the other free fall school, jump master, all those ones. And all I do is just laugh at the Army the entire time. And so here I am in the middle of Army land. But I was really looking forward to flying. So I kind of sucked that egg and I assimilated pretty quick. I honestly was so excited to fly for a living and not pay for it anymore. Mm-hmm. And looking down the road to go to the 160th. That I never really like badmouth the Army. I'm kind of pretty loyal. If you're paying my paycheck, I'm pretty loyal to you.
Right.
I don't really get too worked up about it. All their bases suck and they don't have any nice place to live. But other than that, so I spent 1 year in flight school. And when I was in flight school, I called that same guy who kind of told me about the 160th, a guy in CDB4, Rick Starr. He was the regiment recruiter at the time. And I said, hey, I want to come to 160th. And I was still in flight school, and nobody had really done that to this point. You had to go out in the Army, do like 4 or 5 years in the Army before you went to 160th. So
okay.
I sent him an application, and he sent one back, and, you know, through a lot of other little wickets. But so I got orders to go assess the 160th while I was still in flight school as an unwinged student.
That sounds rare.
Yeah,
that sounds like it doesn't happen often.
No, not at all, and not that I was any Jedi Knight or anything. I just had unique qualifications. So
they wanted guys
who had soft ground experience.
That makes sense.
And I had a lot of civilian flight time. So I mean, I was number one in my class in flight school. So I think someone at the regiment.
So that totally makes sense. Said, yeah.
Yeah, they're like, eh, we'll take a chance.
Yeah.
So I went up and assessed. It was a week long assessment. Actually, they told me afterward, hey, you smoked it. You know, for your experience level, you completely smoked it. They accepted me. So before I graduated from flight school, I went back down to Fort Rucker with orders back to the 160th to be an MH-47 pilot. So I spent about another month back at Fort Rucker, graduated, came up to the 160th. I graduated as a Black Hawk pilot, went back up to the 160th at Fort Campbell, in process for about 2 weeks, and they sent me back down to Rucker to get qualified on the CH-47 Chinook, and then I went back up to Fort Campbell for good, started my training on an MH-47.
Man.
So that was about it was about 8 months long, and then I checked into B Company 2nd Battalion as an MH-47 pilot at Fort Campbell.
That's wild. That's so wild to me. And I think it's so cool to actually break down. You said you got accepted to the program early, but obviously you said you're doing all this stuff on the side. Like, you're still in the Navy at the time, right? You were a SEAL and you were still doing all your flying license. You got your flying or your pilot license on the side. You said you did all these other things. You were maintaining these things. So to me, it's like, ding, ding, ding. Of course you got it, because you're not a regular case there. You're not a regular case study. You're doing all this stuff on the side. And like you said, you had all this other experience for 12 years. So I think it's pretty cool to note, like, for people working on things, like, a lot of times you've already said, like, you didn't necessarily know where you were going. You didn't have it obviously all planned out. And sometimes we feel like we need to have it all planned out, but you're still doing the things you enjoy on the side, like flying and all this other stuff you were doing. And when something comes up, you're like, oh, that looks fun. I want to do that. So you like, you just go and do it. And I think that's what's really cool amongst all this other stuff is that you see something you want to do and you don't think like, oh shit, I probably can't do that because that's Army and I'm Navy, or I probably can't do that quick. So you just applied to Buds. You didn't really know what the hell you're getting into. You applied to the 160th. You didn't really know what you're getting into, and you did it early, you know? So I think that's, amongst everything else, like I said, that's really cool to take those things away as well.
Well, yeah, I'm nothing if not deliberate, Chris, like really deliberate. Yeah. So I don't do anything haphazardly. So
sure.
Each one of these things that I attempted, you know, I did a ton of research on it. At that point, I kind of knew what I was getting myself into, but
that's another good point though.
Big,
you know?
Yeah. Like, I mean, I'm also a big fan of no fail. So when I applied for a program, I did everything humanly possible in my power that I could influence to make sure that the answer was yes.
So we are almost,
that's kind of a key point.
We're almost identical like that. So obviously, and with social media on a rampant run the last few years, a lot of people talk about, you know, failures and showing your failures. But one of the things I haven't talked about too much is what you just said. And even though I'm okay with failure, and I know it inevitably will happen at some point in some things, but I do everything, like you just said, everything possible to prevent failure. Like, I don't leave anything to chance. Like, when I got out of the Navy, I started applying for the job that I do now, 2.5 years before. I was doing everything. I was pulling all these strings, talking to everybody I knew how to talk to. And I was making sure that it was a no-fail mission, because I was going to go in there. And just like you don't go in on an op and go, hopefully we make it, you know? So it's the same thing with your civilian life to me. Like, I'm not going to go out there and risk my life and not have a job and for my family and for my wife and for my daughter. Like, I'm going to go out there and I'm going to do everything possible to make it through and make that happen.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know why you would. I just kind of laugh. I tell guys that work for me, and I did, you know, when I was at West Point at the CO there and guys at the 160th, I'm like, hey, pilots that work for me, I said, hey, any of these things cross your mind, these passive words, like, I hope it works out, it should be okay,
yeah,
I think, you know, fate, hope, any of those things, I said, that's a crutch. If you have to use any of those, you need to go back and you need to plan better.
Yeah.
You know, and the same thing goes if you're applying for a program or trying to reach a goal or something like that. Yes, you're right. You are going to fail. But if it's going to be a failure, you want that failure to be because of something you had no influence over. Sometimes the cards are just not in your favor. You know, if you're applying for a program, sometimes that cycle, they're only accepting purple females from Indonesia. You know what I mean? And you can't do anything about it. But I'll tell them, you know, for example, guys or girls that are trying to go to flight school as warrant officers, I still do a lot of mentorship for them. And, you know, and I'm like, hey, sometimes you can't help it, like I said, that they're only picking 25 people this cycle. And, they want people with, like I said, they want purple females that month or whatever.
Yeah.
I said, but if you're a fat ass and you didn't study enough for your SIF test, or your grades suck, or they want associate's degrees and you're too lazy to get it, all those things are in the scope of your influence. You could have gone and done.
Yeah.
You know, so you know what? If you can't get a 300 on your PT test because your push-ups suck, I don't care. You can go do more push-ups. You know, you can't just say, well, I hate running. Well, you can fix that. There's a whole bunch of things that you can fix, and don't sweat the stuff that you can't.
Yeah. I'm just so glad to hear you say that, and that when you have a scope of influence and all the people that you do, that you're able to say that to them as well, because I try to live my life on that. Like, I want to make sure that I do everything I possibly can to set myself up for success. And if there's something out of my scope of control, then I'm not going to stress about that, because if I stress about everything that wasn't in my control, I'll be in a world of hurt. So as long as I know I can control the things that I can control, then that's exactly what I'm going to work on.
And, you know, and it may sound cliche, and I'm sure you've experienced this too.
Sure.
There's been a whole bunch of things that I've worked my ass off towards that didn't pan out.
Sure.
But at the same time, I've never had a single one of those failures not develop into some other opportunity I didn't see coming.
Mm-hmm.
And that's true. I mean, my entire career is not at all, this is not at all what I had planned. My entire career is a series of pivotal points where I failed, it didn't work, you know, I didn't get accepted. But then I actually ended up getting something better that I hadn't planned on every single time without fail.
It's so cool how that works. And I think if you like have that mindset of like, well, you just said you're going to do everything you possibly can to make it work. And if it doesn't, you still have that like opportunist mindset of, well, I'm just going to still keep on doing things and still look for areas that I can succeed in and things that I want to do. And I think if you constantly have that mindset, then when something comes up, you're going to be more than ready to be able to tackle it.
Absolutely.
One of these things, I read one of your quotes. I wrote it down here so I wouldn't mess it up. It says, "I've never regretted a single experience in my last 3 decades. This is right when you just retired. And to be honest, when retirement came with a fair amount of reflection, regret, and anxiety, but now it's time to move on." So obviously, again, like with 3 decades of experience, but is there can you pull or just give us one of your best lessons that you learned or thoughts of reflection after such a career? Like a piece, if I was like, what's the best piece of advice? Is there something or you can narrow it down to?
You know, and I hate this because it sounds cliche.
Oh, I say cliche stuff all the time.
I can't, but you cannot have any regrets at the end of something like this. Mm-hmm. I mean, it doesn't have to be a military, but whatever profession you're going to do or your life,
mm-hmm.
You know, when I talk to sports teams and a lot of young people and folks like that, I tell them, hey, whatever it is you want to do, and a lot of college students, you know, I do a lot of, like I said, Division I teams and college ROTC stuff.
Okay.
I'm like, hey, whatever you want to do, man, strive for it. Go to the moon, climb Everest, all that crazy shit that you want to do, now is the time to do it. You know, do it and fail greatly, like dare and can fail greatly. Now, that doesn't mean be stupid and get yourself killed.
Yeah.
But set your goals and go for it. Because what you don't want to be is what I see all the time, especially being in the soft community and kind of all my soft brethren from all the services see it. What you don't want to see is the 55-year-old guy hanging out in VFW, lying, telling stories about what he should and could have done, living a life of dejection and regret, you know, because he's an insurance guy living in a cubicle, you know, because he did the safe thing or couldn't get off the couch or whatever it is. You know, but don't be that guy. Do not have those regrets at the end of life. Because when you're 50 or whatever and you have a family and kids going to college and all that stuff that life burdens you with, that's not the time to decide you're going to go be an MMA fighter. You know? I mean, in a practical scope. So all those things, you know, be prepared to seize the opportunities when they come to you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, always be prepared for it. So that's really... You know, if you had to encapsulate that whole 30 years of the lessons that I learned, because I didn't know that I was doing that at the time. You just think, oh, I'm going to go do something fun. You know, when you're 21 or whatever, you just think, I'm going to go do something cool.
Sure.
You don't have the wherewithal to see down the road how it's going to affect your life 10, 15, 20 years down the road. I mean, you just can't. Mm-hmm. You're a dumb kid. You know, so I didn't know I was doing it at the time, but I was just seizing the opportunities and – you know, 3 or 4 of those different opportunities completely changed and shaped the scope of my entire life. And they always will.
Yeah.
And that's not just limited to special operations stuff. You know, that's just dealing with people and opportunities. But, I mean, that's the big takeaway. If I had to pick one, that's it, is just do not at the end of your life have regrets. You know, and like I said, that means something different for everyone. It doesn't mean, like I said, you have to go be an astronaut or, an NFL player. That's what it is for some people, but the scope of your goals is kind of in line with what you're doing in your life. But you think it, go do it.
I think so. And I can't remember what book it was or an article or something I was reading, but they were literally interviewing people in on the tail end of their lives, like 80s, 90s. And the number one thing they said was regret. I wish I had done this. I wish I had done that. And to me, that was incredibly sad. So to hear you say this is very good. And I would, like you said, it's not for everybody, but I know that's one of the things that fuels a lot of my decisions is I was nothing short of apprehensive to get out after 9 years because there's a lot of safety net there in the military and there's a lot of promising careers as well in the military. And I was having a great time, like those things we talked about missing, right? So I did want to say one of the things that you were saying that you said a couple times that you were calling yourself a horrible student. People were saying you were a horrible student. I just thought that was a kick because of all the things that you went on to go ahead and do in your career. And I think it speaks, like you said yourself, like things are so different for everybody, but you were able to go out there despite these people saying you were a horrible student and then not doing good in a couple things and doing only school for or college for a year and then be able to be successful. I mean, that's a pretty incredible mindset to have, is still go out there being despite being told those things, right?
Well, I don't have any like poor kid stories, Chris. Now, keep in mind, nothing I've done in my life required advanced algebra or quantum physics. So keep that in mind. You know,
I don't know. Are you selling yourself short though? Like, you've done some really impressive stuff. I think it's like not idiots don't go out there and fly helicopters and become Navy SEALs. I mean, maybe it happens, but I don't think you're the exception.
No, there's a lot of things I'm good at.
Yeah.
But, being a student is not one of them. So,
yeah,
you know, we can kind of limit to that. There was one kind of funny story when I did my assessment for the 160th. One of the things you do is you actually take an IQ test, the same one they give the SF guys and Delta Selection. And so I took this IQ test, and the psychologist was a gentleman named Dr. Franklin. And his little exit interview with me, he's like, "So, you know, how'd you think you did at the IQ test?" I'm trying to be political. You know, I'm like, "Well, I think I did okay. You know, it was all right." And kind of danced around a little bit. He goes, "Hey, how do you think you did?" He goes, "Stop bullshitting me." I'm like, "Well, I think I did good." He goes, "Yeah." He goes, "You did all right." He goes, "You're not going to fly the space shuttle, but you did okay." So, you know, every once in a while, when you think you're at the top of the world, somebody levels you like that.
Yeah. But it sounds like it fueled you too.
But the biggest point is, now keep in mind this whole horrible student thing, you know, I kind of laugh at myself. My last 3 years was at the United States Military Academy at West Point. I was a commanding officer of the aviation detachment there, the executive flight detachment, which blows me away that in no way, shape, or form would I ever be qualified to even set foot on that campus as a student. And yet, you know, I was one of the primary staff, and I was teaching military leadership and ethics to cadets. So I was actually teaching academic classes and character development. So I kind of laughed at the end of that. I'm like, a guy who didn't even graduate from college is teaching, you know, some of the nation's most influential and brilliant minds before they go out to be lieutenants. So I don't think anyone knew. I was the first warrant officer to ever teach academic classes there. So I'm not sure they knew what they were getting into, but kind of felt like I pulled the wool over the Army, but had a great time. That was probably one of the more rewarding things that I did those 3 years at West Point. But that was a great way to cap it off, you know, kind of laughing. That's like so the cool kid who barely graduated from high school, got kicked out of college, and I'm teaching at West Point. So
that's, I mean, just
that was pretty neat.
From me to you, that's super inspiring. I'm a college dropout too. I think I barely did 2 years, and I didn't see a lot of hope for myself before I joined the military. I was really just a screw off kid, really selfish. So to hear you say that after 30 years it's really meaningful to me, because I faced a lot of adversity because of that. I was that slack job that didn't get their associates in the military. I'll be straight up with you. You know, I was that guy. And,
me too.
You know, and I did a lot of these things, and I wasn't perfect. And slowly but surely, I'm figuring out, like, there are other ways to do things, but I think I probably made some things more difficult for me than I needed to. But, you know, here I am, and I got out, and I have a better job than I could have hoped for, and I'm very grateful for that. And you've had, like we said, you were teaching there, and I think that's just, it's so cool and so inspirational to hear. And I've thoroughly enjoyed my time with you. I'm looking over, and fortunately we've gotten to our time already, and I really do appreciate it. I'm super humbled to have you on here and talk with you and peer into your career a little bit, so I do appreciate that. But for others that want to learn more about you, maybe find you on the internet or something, how can they find you?
So I've got you can find me on LinkedIn. Okay. And you can also get me on Instagram, Michael G. Rutledge on Instagram.
Cool.
Perfect. Pretty easy. I'm the only one wearing an Army uniform with a trident on it.
That is cool. You don't see that every day.
No, it is a unicorn.
That's so cool. All right, Mike, thanks so much, and have a great rest of your night.
You too, Chris.
All right.